Millions of gallons of reservoir water poured through the floodgates and down the new Oroville Dam main spillway yesterday. Back in 2017, the old spillway failed and tens of thousands of people in the area were evacuated. So, does the new construction now mean that everyone's safe? On Insight, I'll talk with Joel Ledesma, Deputy Director of the State Water Project. He's with the agency that oversees the Oroville Dam and Reservoir. Also today, PolitiFact has been fact-checking 2020 presidential candidates, including California Senator Kamala Harris. We'll talk about topics from military pensions to marijuana to teachers' issues. And we're doing an abbreviated show again today. At 9:30, you'll hear the takeaway and a story about Michael Brown's mother, who was running for a city council seat in Ferguson, Missouri. I'm Beth Ruyak. Insight is just ahead. You're listening live to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Let's shift for a moment to the 2020 presidential race and some fact-checking from the campaign trail. Chris Nichols from the PolitiFact California team is in the studio with me. Hi, Chris.
Good morning,
Beth. Glad
to
have you here.
Thank you.
And Angie Holland, the National PolitiFact editor, is with us from Washington, D.C. Always glad to have Angie in the conversation. Hi, Angie.
Hi, Beth. Thanks for having me.
All right, Chris, let's start with California Senator Kamala Harris. And a fact check that's getting a lot of attention, this one had to do with military pensions. You want to explain the situation?
That's right. This is essentially comes from a tweet that Harris sent out earlier in March. And she said that the Trump administration is raiding, quote, raiding money from military service member pensions to pay for the border wall. And Harris has had some sharp words for the president on his immigration policies, on his plans to build a border wall. And I believe we have a clip of Harris making a criticism of the president.
This administration has decided to vilify them and to trade on them for the sake of this president's medieval vanity project called a wall.
So it's one discussion to talk about the wall, but what you looked at in particular was whether the administration is, quote, raiding money from the military pensions for this project.
Right. That was a very specific claim. And, you know, it comes from an Associated Press news article. That's what Harris's campaign cited. And the headline from that article, when you look at it quickly, you might think that she's absolutely right. It says Pentagon may tap military pay and pensions for border wall. It's a very short, quick headline, but it leaves out a lot of information. And anybody, especially an elected official, of course, is expected to go beyond a headline, check out what the story actually says. If you read the first paragraph of the story, it talks about leftover money being moved from the pay and pension accounts to other accounts that could then be used for border wall construction, not taking any money out of any service member's pension or any pay. We spoke with a number of military budget experts, including Todd Harrison, who is a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. That's a bipartisan nonprofit policy research group.
Let's listen.
It's a separate issue, worth debating whether or not that money should be used for the border wall or should be used for other purposes within the military. But the fact that they're moving money out of these accounts is not an indication that anyone is cutting military pay or cutting benefits or pension payments. That's not the case. This was leftover money.
So he's essentially characterizing her statement there.
That's right. And one other detail just to pass along here. This money, it's leftover pay and retirement funds that are available because fewer soldiers opted for an early retirement program that the Army was offering, and because the Army missed a recruitment goal by about 6,500 enlistees. So, again, it was not money that was planned to go into any accounts for existing service members. These were goals that they did not reach. The money could have gone to other military projects or funds. Instead, it's going to an account that then the Trump administration hopes to tap to use for border barriers or the border wall.
So there again, no service members would lose pay or retirement benefits as a result of this move. So what is the rating that you put on Kamala Harris's statement?
We found that her claim was off the mark, and we rated this one false.
Angie, I'm going to ask you to jump in here and just review for everybody the rating scale that PolitiFact and PolitiFact California, the entire PolitiFact franchise across the country uses.
We have a series of ratings that we try to give people a sense of relative accuracy. So true means the statement is accurate. Mostly true means the statement is accurate, but needs additional information or clarification. Half true means the statement is partially accurate, but it lacks important context. Then we get to the negative side with mostly false, which means has an element of truth, but leaves out critical information that would give a different impression. False is simple, the statement is not accurate. And then pants on fire means the statement is not accurate and makes a ridiculous claim.
All right, Chris, one more Kamala Harris fact check.
That's right. We also looked at a statement that Harris made about student loan debt. And this is a topic, student loan debt, cost of living issues that Harris has really, really talked about quite a bit on the campaign trail. And the specific claim that we looked at, again, from a tweet that Harris made in March, was that she said college debt has increased 170% since 2006 and now exceeds $1.5 trillion, which she said is now second only to mortgage debt in the country and surpasses even credit card debt. So with concerns about cost of living, tuition, we thought this was an interesting one to look at. We spoke with Mark Kantrowitz. He's a national financial aid expert, and he took a look at the statement. He helped us crunch some numbers, and he gave his thoughts on her on the accuracy of her statement.
I'd say that her statement is mostly correct, and the one slight error, she actually underestimates the growth of student loan debt outstanding.
Hmm. So she was right about college debt topping $1.5 trillion and growing, I guess, based on his statement, and being second only to mortgage debt. So the rating you put on this fact check?
And this one, we said it was mostly true. The only thing that was off, she actually underestimated how fast it's grown. It's grown closer to 200% since 2006. So she had most of her facts right, ended up being mostly true.
You are listening to Chris Nichols from the PolitiFact California team based at CAP Radio. And I'm talking also with Angie Holan. She is the national PolitiFact editor based in Washington. So Angie, everybody's fact-checking the candidates right now. Your team has been doing so, too. Let's talk about one you focused on, candidate John Hickenlooper.
That's right. John Hickenlooper is the former governor of Colorado, and he had a CNN town hall where he was asked about the state's experience legalizing marijuana. And one of the things he said that just caught our attention was that he said, we haven't seen a spike in consumption. So we wanted to double check that, see what happened after Colorado legalized marijuana. And we found that there wasn't a spike, but there was a fairly notable increase among adults who used marijuana in the past month in Colorado. The number went from about 10% of adults to about 18% of adults. So that was an increase, though it might not be a spike, as he said.
Let's listen to his own words then from that CNN town hall.
And I have to say, at this point, most of our fears haven't come true. We haven't seen a spike in consumption. Significant increase among senior citizens, but I leave that to your own imagination. But I think the solution, I've come more and more to believe now that what the worst didn't happen, and even though our system's not perfect yet, we still have a black market, I think it's so much better than the old system when we sent millions of kids to prison, most of them kids of color, and not only imprisoned them, but made them felons, made difficult lives, already difficult lives, much, much harder.
That was quite a lively conversation on that topic. But in terms of his statement, Angie, what was the PolitiFact rating?
We just looked at whether there was a spike or not. He said there was not. We rated that half true. It's partially accurate. There wasn't a spike, but there was a notable increase.
Okay, we have time for one more. Very quickly, let's talk about a fact check you did on Beto O'Rourke.
Yes, Beto O'Rourke is the former Senate candidate from Texas, and he has declared for the presidency and is campaigning in Iowa. Do you have his quote?
Yeah, let's take a listen.
I want to hear from you about what it's like in Iowa. Let me share with you what I learned in Texas. Nearly half of public school teachers in Texas are working a second or a third job, not for kicks, not for extra spending cash, but just to make ends meet, to put food on the table, to buy that medication with a $444 copay, just to exist.
So when you fact-checked that statement, what did you find?
Well, we were interested in how you would know this. And what it led us back to was a survey online for teachers, and teachers voluntarily answered it. So in some ways, it's not a scientific sample or a random sample. So that was our first problem. Then we found the number who said they needed to get second jobs was not nearly half. It was 39%. So that was less than what he suggested. And they didn't provide nearly the level of detail he suggested about why they were doing a second or third job. So overall, we balanced all this out and we rated his statement half true.
All right, we're going to leave it there with both of you. Angie Holin from the National PolitiFact team. Hi again, Angie, and bye again. Thanks for joining us today. Mm-hmm. And Chris Nichols from PolitiFact California. And you can find many more fact checks of the 2020 presidential race and Kamala Harris in particular
at politifact.com/California.
All right, thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you.
I do have one more invitation. We'd like your help with tomorrow's show. We are going to be talking about the glaciers in Yosemite and the impact of climate change. So if you have a question for my guest, who tomorrow will be reporter Daniel Duane, we have opened up a hotline, and today we ask that you leave a message. You might actually hear your question during our conversation. So that number is area code 916-234-3279. Again, that's 916-234-3279. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. We're going to go back to our conversation with Joel Ledesma. He is the Deputy Director of the State Water Project for the California Department of Water Resources. He's standing by right now on the phone. And are you with us now, Joel?
Good morning, Beth.
All right. Tell me what's happening at the dam and the spillway today. Give me some technicalities about how it's performing.
Thank you. So we're, normal operations. We're utilizing the main spillway to, make room for rain and snowmelt, and everything is working as planned. We had our check-in meeting yesterday with our internal experts and the federal regulators and state regulators to, compare notes on the performance and the monitoring that's been done, and everything is checking out to perform as designed.
The water rushing down the spillway is a dramatic image for everybody, but tell me in the bigger picture what's different behind the scenes in the operation and the maintenance of this project.
Well, we have modernized the spillway to today's, engineering practices and modern technology. The spillway was built, the past spillway was built 50 years ago with the modern technologies and practices of that time. So, the spillway today is much more robust and it's built to today's standards. So, we were expecting it to perform. And, we know that there's a lot of attention on the spillway. So we're making sure that we're being transparent and making sure that we're providing live feeds and providing information to the public and to our all downstream communities to make sure that they feel that everything's going okay and that we're doing our best to make sure we're protecting them through the facility since it is a flood control outlet on top of water supply.
Two specifics, Joel. The forensic report talked repeatedly about underlying poor quality foundation materials. So that's either the bedrock or the soil or the combination of material underneath the slab. How is that material different right now?
Well, you know, that spillway was built, you know, with the practices of 50 years ago. And today, you know, when we did the reconstruction, we took all the potential physical factors that that team put forward as possibilities, and we've included them into our design and made sure that our design mitigated for all those things. And
so does that mean that there's actually different material, new material under the slab now?
Well, you know, so we used roller compacted concrete, which was not available at that time. And so we have, a lot of feet of roller compacted concrete where some of the old rock was washed down through the incident. And, you know, we have on average concrete thickness of 7.5 feet, over 7,000 anchors, 12.5 million pounds of reinforcing steel. So that concrete, that spillway is built very robust.
That's another question I have. That amount of reinforcing steel, 12.4 million pounds. Any comparison? How much steel was used before?
You know, I don't really have that number in front of me, Beth, but I can say that, you know, it's been built with the latest technology. And, you know, the original spillway was about 2.5 feet thick. And like I said earlier, we're, you know, on average about 7.5 feet thickness of concrete with two layers of reinforcing steel.
Does this new construction, Joel, mean that everyone in the area is safe?
Yes. I think, you know, we had all the industry experts from across the country and potentially the world and the regulators on site every day reviewing the designs, providing input. We had a board of consultants that was also looking at our designs, and they were with us throughout the construction as everything was being inspected. And so I would say that, you know, everybody should be very confident that the best minds were on this spillway today.
I understand that the DWR is looking at all of its dams and flood control facilities and modernizing all infrastructure. Has any other project needed as much work as has been put into Oroville?
You know, we're doing all our assessments now, and you're correct. We are taking a deep dive at all our facilities and spillways, and we're in that process of analyzing all that and prioritizing so that we can make the right decisions on continuing to invest in the State Water Project. You know, the State Water Project was built over 50 years ago, and therefore an aging infrastructure. And so we definitely need to prioritize and modernize all facilities to make sure that California can benefit from, you know, the water supply that it provides for millions of people in the state.
I just have a few seconds left, Joel, but we had used words like crisis, near disaster, incident, a lot of quite powerful and dramatic words. What words should we be using now about the situation at Oroville?
I think we should be using the word normal operations. You know, the department is now operating with a full functional spillway. We should be just operating as normal now.
All right. Again, thank you for our technical situation today. Joel Ledesma is Deputy Director of the State Water Project for the California Department of Water Resources. And Joel, I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much, Beth.
You can find a link to the forensic report of the spillway incident on our website. And again, leave a message today with your question about Yosemite's glaciers. The number is 916-234-3279. 916-234-3279. This has been Insight on CAP Radio, and now we leave you with the takeaway.